Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 81 for October 31st, 2008, Windows 7 and Azure. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. And by GoToMyPC, wherever you go, access your PC and all your files, programs, and email remotely with GoToMyPC. For a free trial of this award-winning service, visit GoToMyPC.com/Windows. He's back from La La Land and the Worldwide Professional Developers Conference, Microsoft's Quadrennial Festival. Mr. Paul Thurrott, welcome to Windows Weekly. This is the day to do a show.
I guess so.
Are you tired? Are you bushed?
Yeah.
You were
excited. They're doing another one of these next year.
Now, that's interesting because they don't...
That's unusual.
Yeah.
I wonder what that means.
I don't know. When was the last one?
2005.
Really?
Yep.
So these are not... They're not every year. They do them when there's a new version of Windows? Is that...
Or a new platform of some kind. You know, they did one for .NET.
Okay.
So I'm thinking...
Okay. So they must have a Stratera announcement next week, next month, next year.
Stratera?
What is it? No, it's got a new name. Azure.
Azure. The worst product name in the history of Microsoft.
What happened to Strata?
I don't know. That was a good name because everyone pronounces it the same way. Azure is like Assure, Azure. I mean, it's all over the map.
It's no worse than Bonjour Networking, which is Apple's bete noire.
Well, I think it is worse actually, but okay.
But it's cool. It's blue.
It is blue.
And it's the sky.
I have the wristband too.
Oh, what does it say on
which,
it?
It just says Experience Azure.
And it's a very light baby blue, kind of, you know, I hate to say it, but if you look at your album art, it's the same shade of blue that's floating behind Paul on his album art. That light baby blue.
Interesting.
We must have known. In fact, it looks like you're floating in the clouds.
I am floating in the clouds.
All right. So no, let's get down to it. I should say that we are going to do a special edition of This Week in Tech also on Sunday. With
yes.
you, Jerry Purnell is going to come by. Is Ray going to join us?
Ray.
I don't know who
Ray
is.
Oh, Raphael.
Raphael.
I believe he is.
Okay.
I believe he is.
Send me a list of people I can
Not
send.
Ray Ozzie.
Not Ray Ozzie. I would like it if Ray joined us.
Sure.
And then anybody else, I don't know if Mary Jo Foley or whoever you think would be appropriate.
I think we should try her. Maybe Ed Bott.
Bott would be great. Okay. So we'll get the little round table going of these guys. So TWiT will be all about PDC, but here's like for Windows people, serious Windows people, mm-hmm. this is the insider look at PDC. So there were really two things they were talking about, Windows 7 and Azure.
Oh, I think there were like 17 things they were talking about.
That's what makes it.
There was all kinds of stuff, you know. I think we should hit the high points.
Yes. I'm ready.
And then go to bed. You know. In fact, maybe I should have done this from bed.
From bed would be good. You're sounding after a CES.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, they had a party every single night. And I went to all of them except for the last night, thank God. Although I still ended up staying up late like an idiot. But you know, it's hard not to say no. It's you know, it's on the roof of a hotel. It's beautiful out.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's free.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Hot and cold running, Bill Gates. Did they have Bill Gates? Yeah, was he there?
That's stupid. No, he wasn't there.
Ah, see, there you go.
Which is fine, because actually Ray Ozzie proved that he could be just as boring as Bill Gates in a keynote address, which I...
That's too bad.
See, they were all afraid no one was going to be able to replace the guy, but actually, he still takes 30 minutes to get to the point, and it's good stuff.
So, did you get the hard drive?
Yeah, but you know the hard drive was sort of a non-event because actually I don't have it plugged in to tell you exactly. But first of all, it's not full of 160 gigs worth of stuff. It's full of maybe 90 gigs. You know, not that that's horrible, but you're basically looking at, you know, Windows 7, obviously, 32 and 64-bit versions, Windows Server 2008. And that's just about it on the software end. There's a beta version of Visual Studio 2010, but it's only available through a VM. So you have to run it in a virtual environment. You can't even install it yourself.
Well, and is that to protect it from getting out?
No, I think it's because it wasn't ready.
Oh, all right.
You know, the big deal was... I'm sorry?
Tell me what the big deal was. I'm more interested than anything I have, little thing I might have to say.
Well, so one of the things I couldn't really talk about ahead of time was they had a reviewer's workshop on Sunday, the day before PDC started, and it was kind of a limited audience type thing, obviously. It wasn't the whole press corps there.
So you got to go to that.
Yeah, so I went to that, that was fantastic. It was an all-day event, but they actually gave us computers, like laptop computers, that had Windows 7 pre-installed on it. And
that's a good
idea. They're not ours to keep. We have to give them back, but we can use them during the duration of the beta and install new builds as they come along. And I think that the point of it was, you know, we got these things on Sunday. They're announcing everything on Tuesday. This gave us an opportunity to have the thing up and running, and we could just get going. So, you know, it had Office on there, so we could actually write on it and use it right away and then come up with stuff. Because all of the people who were there, like myself, Ed Bott, you know, Mary Jo Foley, all those people, you know, we need to have material ready to roll, you know, the second that the NDA expires. And this was actually kind of a nice way of doing it. So it's a cool little computer, too. It's one of those little... ThinkPad X300s, you know, it's teeny and
I like that. That's the real thin one.
Yeah, real thin.
It's not a netbook, though. Because, you know, this is one of the problems Microsoft had at their earnings, quarterly earnings call. They're saying, people are buying a lot of netbooks here, and this is kind of hurting us.
Yeah, problem solved, though, with Windows 7, because Windows 7 runs on these netbooks.
Very smart.
Steven Sinofsky, the guy who's running Windows Development now, his day-to-day machine is a netbook with a gig of RAM and a 1 gigahertz Atom processor in it.
Wow. Is that a turnaround or what?
That's fascinating. Well, that's what they had to do, right? So, yeah. So that was good. So that was Sunday. And then, of course, you know, we're all pumped up about Windows 7. And then they open PDC and they don't talk about Windows 7 at all. So
what?
The first day kind of came and went. It was so terrible. They talked about this Windows Azure thing.
Right.
And Windows Azure, of course, is a cloud computing platform. And it was so confusing and so boring. And and it was just terrible because, you know, we came off of this Sunday thing. Everyone was really excited and couldn't wait for the whole world to see this stuff. And then Sunday kind of came and went. They never even mentioned it, you know. And it was just typical.
Azure the same as Live Mesh, or is this something new?
No. And you know something? I would love to be able to sit here and tell you exactly how these things work, but I'll give you my understanding of it. The sad thing is I sat through the, keynote address, and we live blogged it, a bunch of us. And then I had a meeting with them for 45 minutes afterwards and asked, I mean, maybe 117 questions because I really, and in fact, I asked so many questions, I felt like the annoying guy. You know, I
don't, you were that guy.
I usually just sit there and take notes, but this time I'm really having a hard time understanding how all these pieces fit together. Right. I've seen an enormous number of very cool things, but the big picture part of it, I'm still a little fuzzy on. But my understanding of it is this. They're basically creating a version of Windows Server that runs in the cloud. And by in the cloud, I mean only on Microsoft's data centers. And it will go across the globe eventually. In the beginning, of course, it'll start in the United States, but eventually this thing will be all around the world. It will only be hosted on Microsoft servers, and that allows them, of course, to update things and do all that stuff on the back end and take advantage of all the, you know, the scaling and virtualization technologies that they've been working on and having experiences with over the past several years. But for customers, what you can do is do things like rent a hosted Exchange platform up there in the cloud, or create an application that runs up on the cloud, and you sort of pay for the time that it's up there running, you know, that kind of thing. So the payment model part of it is not completely clear. You know, they haven't exactly announced the exact pricing, right? But the idea is that this stuff will run, as far as we're concerned, outside of Microsoft, up in the cloud, you know, and it's the overall platform. And they've said that on the enterprise side, all of their enterprise servers will be made available as hosted services up in the cloud through this Azure platform. You know, and there are the obvious ones like Exchange and SQL Server, which is, you know, we call SQL Services, you know, the cloud version and so forth, as well as anything else they do. So anything that's available locally, you'll be able to do it on the server, the services end, on the cloud end, and basically pay Microsoft, however that happens, by month, by, you know, computing bits, sounds, you know, however it works.
This sounds so much like the old days of time-shared computing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
It feels like a step backwards in some ways. I mean, I guess that's Dvorak's complaint about this always.
Well, yeah. So the time-sharing stuff, obviously, it was a different era. And for the most part, you had to be local to the machine. And by local, I don't just mean on-site. I mean within a telephone call kind of thing. Because you weren't you know, doing complicated things, right?
Right.
This type of thing, it spans the globe. And it's really complex applications. I mean, there's a lot of big issues here when you're running something where you're sort of doing it locally, but it's really running up in the cloud somewhere. So it's impressive in that sense. You're right. I mean, I think conceptually it is. Yeah. I mean, it is kind of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think the impressive part of this too is that it's Microsoft doing it, right? So depending on how you measure such things, they're late to the game in some ways. Obviously, Google has some sort of an app engine, and Amazon has their EC2. Cloud platform that will run Microsoft servers, by the way. But this is Microsoft. I mean, they're moving everything over to there. So it is, I think it is impressive. Now, as far as the live mesh, live services stuff and all that goes, it's kind of hard to say exactly how it fits in. It is part of the puzzle. It's the consumer part of the puzzle. I guess I would say that live mesh is the sync platform underlying their wider live services platform, which is all of the consumer stuff.
Right. So Live Mesh is a subset of the Azure.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's one, and it's the sync part of it, which makes sense. That's what we saw. That's all we've seen is the sync.
It's sync. It's not just sync, but yes, it is sync. It's also a runtime platform like .NET is.
Okay.
So you can create an application. One of the demos I saw, this is very cool. How do I say this? Live mesh applications are essentially, because they can run in the browser, they can run on a phone, they can run on Windows. There's sort of a Java-like least common denominator thing that happens there. Right. You can create JavaScript/HTML style web applications, but you can also use Silverlight. And Silverlight is itself a subset of the full .NET framework that runs on a Windows PC. So there's some really interesting capabilities there. And we talked about the NBC Olympics app, you know, web app that they had up over the summer, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing there is these applications run on your web desktop from Live Mesh in a browser. They can run on your Windows PC, your Macintosh computer. They can run on your Windows mobile phone and other devices down the road. Anything that's Live Mesh enabled, right? So right now it's PCs, Macs, and web browsers. Oh, and mobile phones. Those are all available now in some capacity or the other. The new part of this platform is the application. So when you write an application, it will run in any of those environments and interoperate between them. So you can do things like one of the demos I saw was a Windows Home Server application running a special version of Live Mesh that isn't publicly available yet that runs on Home Server, controlling home automation controls. So you can log onto a website. You could run it locally. It doesn't matter. You could be on the road and you could back at home be changing, you know, the temperature of the house or turning the lights on and off or whatever it may be.
Hmm. That's cool.
So, yeah. Interesting stuff. So that's Live Mesh. You know, obviously on the Windows Live side, there's the applications they're working on that we've talked about that's now called Live Mesh Essentials. And then there's the Live Services, which are the things like Hotmail and Windows Live Photos and Windows Live Spaces and the other services, some of which are here now, some of which are coming down the road. You know, those things run up in the cloud and essentially will be running on the Azure platform over time, if they're not already, depending on how you look at it.
How much of this is, forgive me, blue sky? And,
yeah.
And how much of it is actually...
Well, it's there. So it is there, right? It's not there in the sense that it's out there in the whole world. I'll tell you something really funny. You know, we've joked about this as being Microsoft Skynet, right?
Yeah.
So one of the Microsoft research tools that runs on Azure is called Terminator.
They knew. Yeah. They get it. They get the joke.
You thought it was a joke. It's real, baby.
That's interesting. So they were able to show you all of this stuff actually working. This wasn't
Not to show it to us. I mean, it's one thing to show it to us, but also give us access to it. Wow. Yeah, we have people who went to PDC can sign up. I got my invitation for Azure. You know, I'm not much of a developer, but I could write applications, have them hosted up on the platform and have them run there and so forth. So that is something I'll play with. I actually really needed to hear and didn't hear was this is exactly how it's all coming together. This is exactly where all the pieces come together. I kind of thought that was going to be the point of this. So
right.
I asked a lot of questions in that Q&A we had, the meeting I had. I don't know. So I need to sit down with them again and we'll go over that stuff. But there's a lot going on there. And I guess the simplest way to look at it is it's Microsoft server platform hosted.
Right.
And available, you know.
And that's not such a stretch. I mean, that's...
When looked at in that light, it's not such a stretch. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on top of it, though, and I guess what will be interesting is doing things like putting Microsoft Office on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things. This happens all the time. You throw, and this is a discussion I had with them this week, you throw something like this out there, and then you see what people do with it, and it gets very interesting. You know, for example, not to get off on a side tangent, but the one I can remember having this conversation about was, there's a feature in Windows Server 2008, and also, interestingly, in Windows 7, where you can mount a virtual hard drive, like a VHD you created with Virtual PC or with a hypervisor, and you can mount it as a drive on your system. Okay, fine. But you can also boot the computer with that thing.
Wow.
And so I said, well, why would
you boot from the cloud?
Well, you can not from the cloud, but from a virtual machine, right?
Okay.
So in other words, let's say you have virtual machines hosted elsewhere or on-premise. It doesn't really matter. And they're running some sort of thing, whatever it might be, a mail server, an e-commerce server. Yep. And maybe Christmas comes and all of a sudden it's really busy. And it's so busy that you want to promote this thing to be on a virtual, on a physical server or servers. That's what this does. It allows you to promote it from a virtual environment to a physical environment. So I said, well, okay, that's very interesting, but what's the end game here? And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, for example, Christmas ends and now you want to put it back in the virtual machine. Is there a wizard for that too? Is that part of the experience? Do you leave it up on the thing? How do you get back to the original environment? And they said, you know, we're going to see what people do with this. You know, they just don't know. This is a capability that they have. But sometimes you have to just let it out let people run with it.
Well, and the best platforms are a sign of a good platform is that you see interesting innovation surrounding it. And the fact that Microsoft is open to that is very encouraging.
Yes. Yeah. So it's really interesting. And I think the power of this Azure thing is interesting because SQL services up in the web or up in the cloud, Exchange Server up in the cloud, these are all very obvious things. But once you've opened up Windows Server to the cloud, that's very interesting because people write Windows applications, but now they're going to be running up in the cloud and they could be anything. And I think we're going to see some really interesting solutions from people outside of Microsoft. And that's what's going to make this really valuable, I think, to the broadest audience possible.
Yeah, no kidding. Now Office is the one that got the most attention, and of course that's the big Microsoft product to put on something like this.
Yeah, I don't know why it got so much. I mean, the thing they announced about Office is so obvious and almost silly, and it's just a web browser hosted version of four of the Office apps. It was Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote.
Okay.
And when you see it, it's obvious. It's a ribbon-like UI, or a ribbon UI, let's call it, in the browser. It's not the full experience. You don't get every single capability, but it's a really rich experience, much better than any of the web-based Office products.
Better than Google Office, which is...
A million times better. I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is what people have been asking for them to do for a long, long time.
Right.
Okay, fantastic. And this is not Office 14. It's part of the Office 14 wave of things that they're going to release, right? So there'll be servers. There'll be services like this, Office Live services. There will be applications, as always, product suites and so forth. That's all coming down the road. But they sort of pre-released this or pre-announced it at PDC. And I can give you a tip. If you want to beta test this thing, all you need to do is sign up now for Office Live Workspace, which is absolutely free. And those people who are on Workspace are the ones who will be invited to beta test this before the end of the year.
Ah.
So if you want to check it out, just go to officelive.com, log on to Workspace, just start a Workspace. It's, like I said, it's free. You need a Windows Live ID. And once you get in there, you'll be on the list to test it.
Ah, cool. So
anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. You can collaborate, too, between Office applications. And on the web at the same, you know, you can be working documents together and so forth. It's kind of a neat thing. So
this strikes me as a win for Microsoft because they've already got everybody. Everybody has the software. So what they're doing is adding that component that might attract people to something like Zoho Office or Google Office.
Yes, it is. It's exactly what I described it as, a defensive move.
Yeah.
It prevents people from leaving.
So we do that too. And since you're you're already using Office, you can have the full experience on your desk.
Yep.
And it interoperates. So you could create a desktop application, then save it to the cloud and like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And
they all work together.
They all work together. And it runs in every browser known to man at this point. They specifically highlighted Safari, for example, as they always do now, because they want to appear to be as open as, you know, Microsoft can be open. So it works in everything. And, you know, that just opens up possibilities for Office users. You know, I suppose people as individuals, there'll be a free ad supported version. So, yeah, I guess some people could not get away without buying Office, perhaps. That's fine. But I think that the big deal here is, you're never going to be trapped out on the road and not have access, you know, to whatever it is, some sort of editing functionality, whatever. So you can view and edit.
I like it.
Because
it doesn't force you to use an online application. You can still use your desktop, but you have the features of it. That's a perfect way to do that.
Yeah.
Is it in Microsoft's interest to move people to this? I mean, I know Microsoft has for years loved the idea of renting software.
Yeah. They are going to make it available to businesses on some sort of subscription basis. And when they, for businesses to pay for that, the advantage they get is they host it locally.
I love that.
They're not out in the public web. And that's really interesting because I'm going to suppose they haven't announced pricing, but I'm guessing the pricing on that will be much cheaper than a traditional Office suite, right? So you can have people who only have light editing requirements, which, by the way, is like probably 97% of the people use Office.
Yeah.
We'll be fine with just this. I mean, between this and Outlook web access, this is your entire Office suite up in the web.
Yeah.
So, you know, for most people, this is probably all they're going to need. And I suspect they'll do the pricing right on that one.
They didn't say what it might cost.
No. No, this was a really early preview.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're talking next year, right?
I'm guessing they're going to plan to ship this thing at the same time as Windows 7.
And there'll be a new desktop, Office 14, and...
There'll be servers, there'll be new Office everything. Live services. Yeah, everything will be updated.
Sounds like, I mean, everything I've read now about Windows 7, it sounds like this is what Microsoft should have done in the first place, maybe.
Except that...
They couldn't.
They couldn't have done this then. That's right. The thing. I mean, I agree with that, but let's be fair. They couldn't have done
it. It's an evolutionary step from Vista.
It is, but it's a nice one because they did all the hard work before. You know, the foundation's been laid. They talk like this all the time, but it really translates into something that people can see. So, you know, with Vista, you had to explain to people, well, it is a major release because they changed all the underpinnings. They made it all componentized. It's a different thing. And they said, yeah, but look, it's got a start button and, you know, a desktop. It looks just like Windows. Yeah, but, you know.
now they're reaping the benefit of this componentization in Windows 7, and they can make a lightweight version. They can make, you know, you include what you need.
They're making it fun and usable.
I said the screenshots I saw looked gorgeous. I mean, I kind of can't wait.
It's the type of thing where as you're using it, you smile a lot. And I was really careful to watch people. And you know, it's like the Monday keynote was classic because, like I said, Ray Ozzie gets up there for 30 minutes, blah, 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 blah. Nothing. It says nothing. And then finally he says, I'm happy to announce our Windows cloud computing platform, Windows Azure. And there was a sort of like, you know, kind of golf clap sort of moment. People sort of felt compelled, like they were supposed to clap, but they weren't really getting it.
Right.
And then the keynote, and, you know, developer audience too, not exactly, you know, the happiest, sunniest group of people, but the Windows 7 demo, which was all about Surface UI, you know, kind of frilly, you know, stuff. And it was just amazing applause again and again and again. And it was like an Apple event in that way. I mean, people loved it. And that stuff that they're doing, I think, is cool. You know, and look, on the one hand, you can look at the thing and say, well, yeah, this looks a lot like Windows Vista, actually. But on the other hand, it does all these little things where you're like, oh, that's really cool. And I think that I think the time is right for them to do the stuff that's really cool. you know, and I think people are ready for it. And they're going to be open to it. And I think they also just killed Windows Vista, by the way, because...
Well, I tweeted... That first thing I saw when I saw it, I tweeted it. I said,
"Yeah,
who is going to buy Vista now?"
Yeah. Right. So people will continue to buy new PCs and they'll have Vista. So
if you get a new PC, yes, for sure.
But let's just say that in the business world...
Yeah, business is going to say, oh, good. Hold on.
We weren't really going to do it anyway, but now we can stop pretending we were.
Right.
And
right.
Now we'll just wait until Windows 7.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it is a good upgrade for business because it's lighter weight.
There are actually business features in there for the first time. It's not as dramatic as they want to make it sound. You know, one of the conversations I had with the server guys was that, you know, this is the first time since Windows 2000 that we've actually designed and developed both of these OSs in tandem together at the same time. And we're going to be able to ship them with these features that are a big deal on both sides of the equation. So back in the Windows 2000 timeframe, they did things like Active Directory and group policy. These are major, major parts of server. It was a big deal and a huge and painful changeover. There's nothing like that in Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2. But there are some technologies that, you know, either work better when you have both in place or, in fact, won't work at all unless you have both in place.
Right.
And that's, you know, okay. You know, not Active Directory big, but kind of interesting. But I think there'll be a big deal for businesses to have both these products at the same time, especially for the guys who kind of like to be out there on the leading edge because some of this stuff is out there, you know, in some way.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you are kind of the holdout on the hardware side and you don't mind wiping the OS and doing something new, you're going to have a better experience with Windows 7 than you would today with Windows Vista. Absolutely.
And all those people who are saying, I want XP, now have something to look for.
Yes, right. If you were that XP guy and you just Windows Vista just wasn't cutting it, perceived or real, it doesn't matter, Windows 7 will probably answer your problems.
I can't think of any time in the past where a new, for any platform, where a new operating system required fewer resources.
I know.
That's kind of unheard of.
Yeah. It is interesting. And I think the Steve Sinofsky netbook thing was the big surprise. And he didn't push that as hard at the keynote as I thought he would, because he told us about that on Sunday when we saw him at that reviewer's workshop.
He should have, because it ties very well in with this earnings call where they said, you know, about a quarter of all the new computers being sold are netbooks and they're not running Vista.
Yeah. Put in perspective, you might think that announcement at that time was not coincidental, and not just because it really happened.
Maybe not. Yeah.
They suddenly had a very nice thing to say, you know,
it looked
but again,
bad
like I said, kind of kills the whole momentum there of the current version, doesn't it? You know, so,
I don't understand.
So buy my Vista book while you still can. It's,
I think it's an acknowledgement. I think it really is the most, I mean, you know, we saw the ad campaign, we saw Mojave clearly acknowledging this. In a way I commend Microsoft because probably there's one group, I'm sure, corporate group that says, fight, fight, fight. This is a better operating system. Vista's great. There's nothing wrong with it. Make them buy it. The more pragmatic group is saying, well, you know, if this is the customer perception, then how do we respond? And clearly that group won long run.
And the public perception is going to actually work in their favor this time because, again, real or imagined, the perception on this one is almost universally, it's not completely universally, but almost universally very positive, you know, very positive. And again, these are, you know, the people I kind of hang with at these shows are very negative in many ways, or I should say very critical about Microsoft and what they do and have been very critical about Vista in many cases, not all cases, but like I said, almost universally, with one almost clownish exception, almost everyone there was overwhelmingly positive and excited about this. I mean, genuinely excited, you know,
right.
And that's neat.
We're going to take a break and then I'm going to ask you who the clownish exception was. And then I'm also going to ask you about the parties. I'm going to ask you about your book giveaway. I know you have more to give away.
Yep.
Macintosh folks, you're not left out here too. There's another announcement. So we'll get to all of that in just a second. But first I want to mention the friends that we have made at Citrix. We love Citrix so much. And the great product, Go to My PC. Go to My PC is the way to securely access your computer, usually your office computer, but it could be any computer from anywhere. And you know what? I downplay this, but I think I should mention it more often. if you've been thinking, I need to set up a VPN so that when I go to a coffee shop or I'm at a hotel, I can still, you know, get work done. I can still surf without risking my security. Go to My PC is a good solution for that, too. It's 128-bit SSL encryption from your computer to your office. Absolutely secure no matter where you are, even if you're in an insecure open hotspot. You don't have to worry. Everything you do is encrypted. No one can hack into it. It's much more secure than, say, RPC. This is a way to really access your computer from anywhere securely, quickly. Nobody's better at speed optimization than Citrix. They know this stuff. So if you have the situation where you travel a lot, maybe you'd like to spend more time at home, less time at the office, maybe you even want to take a 1 day a week and telecommute, go to MyPC is the solution. Go right now to gotomypc.com/windows, gotomypc.com/windows. You can sign up today for 30 days free, unlimited use. Setup is automatic, takes 2 minutes. There's no firewall configuration. There's no router configuration. It just works out of the box. You can log in to gotomypc.com from anywhere on a Mac or a PC, and instantly there's your office desktop just like you're at work. You can send and receive email, run programs, drag and drop files from one computer to the other. You can even run video. You can surf. You can do all the things you do. You're doing it on your office machine, and you're doing it securely. I love GoToMyPC. I know you're going to find a lot of ways to use it. This is kind of cloud, the ultimate cloud computing. You're accessing your office from anywhere, and that includes everything on the office network. Your OLAP cubes, at your LDAP directories, anything that you need. GoToMyPC.com/windows. Give it a try free for the next 30 days. I know you're going to find some great ways to use this. And we thank them so much for their support. PC World's world-class award for best remote access software. Go to My PC. All right. I don't know. Maybe you don't want
to. Actually, before we do that, I have to ask a question.
Yes.
It looks like you're. What is that stuff hanging behind you?
Are you like that?
It looks like you're like in a Vietnamese fishing village or something.
You're close. Those are Tibetan prayer flags.
Are they really?
They were given to me. They're from Mount Everest. They were given to me.
Okay.
By a podcaster who does a show about Everest. He's climbed Everest. He's climbing it again this summer, I think. And these are Tibetan prayer flags. I should take them down, but I just thought they might give us good luck in this bad economy. Does it look like my laundry is hanging up behind me?
It does. It does. although it's little laundry.
Yeah,
it's laundry for that guy on the laptop.
I got little hankies, little red, green, yellow hankies hanging up behind me. No, those are. It was what's the name of the podcast? It was a really cool, like Everest up close, high
it's like
definition.
You're adding, humidity to your office or something.
What is it, Dane? What is it, Dane? Everest? Say it again. I heard you. Best of Everest, something like that. The rest of Everest. That's what it was. It was the rest of Everest because it was extra footage from a documentary done about Everest in high def. Amazing stuff. But that's neither here nor there. So you're saying that everybody at these reviewers workshops on Sunday, everybody was oohing and aahing. We love Windows 7 except...
For one guy.
Now, wait a minute. Now, was Dvorak there?
No.
Somebody like that? Can you say names?
No, I don't want to say what it is because I just met the guy and he was nice to me. But
it was
pointed out to me that he's written several negative, really negative anti-Vista pieces in the past, and his quickie. I just saw it in the keynote and I hate it already. article was something, Windows 7 more of the same kind of thing.
I have to say something. Well, it's going to be more of the same. You're not going to see an upside down window and a menu coming in. I mean, nobody wants that.
I think he was upset because he didn't get invited to the workshop.
Oh, that's what it was.
And apparently,
that makes me cranky when I don't get invited.
Based on what he said to me, that's what I took away from.
All I ask is that Microsoft treat me like anybody else. I wasn't even invited to PDC, so sure.
Sure. So
is a PDC invite or can anybody go?
Anybody can go and pay, but you have to be invited to
as a journalist.
Be there. Yes.
I think I could have if I'd wanted to.
I think you could have gotten in. Yes. Based on some of the.
I'm starting to regret it. It sounds really cool. Steve Gilmore went down there. It sounds really cool.
Well, but on the surface, it sounds like it would be terrible. Like WinHack sounds like it would be really boring. But actually, those shows are pretty good.
Everybody who goes to WinHack, which is the hardware developers conference, loves it. They say this is one of the best conferences of the year.
During the Vista development, it was the best show to go to. It was fantastic.
So is it the parties?
No, it's not the parties. It's never the parties, Leo. Never.
Oh, yeah, right. Is your wife listening? Is that?
Yeah. Well, no, she's.
I have to say, Comdex was the parties. There's no question. That was the fun part of Comdex. CES, a little less so.
Right. Well, so this one, so it's, these are like press parties, analyst parties. You know, they have apparently every group at Microsoft wanted to throw $1 million at the wall and, rent out a hotel for the night or something. I don't know. But. It was good. That stuff was good. But the problem was, you got home at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning and then had to get up at 6 to make it into this thing in time for the morning stuff. And
that's always the problem at CES too.
A couple of days of that, one guy didn't even make it on Wednesday. He was actually offline the entire day. We were so nervous about him. We sent someone back to the room to check on him. And then there was a guy actually the same day, a guy from Microsoft who'd never showed up online. And we have some humiliating photos of him that we'll be using for blackmail later. Let's just say that anytime a drink comes in a color that's not natural to nature, you shouldn't drink it.
No.
Not drink it. Don't drink it in volume either.
No.
So, Brandon, if you're out there.
We got pictures to prove it.
We got the pictures to prove it.
boy.
It was a good time, though.
Did they talk about Windows Mobile at all? No, nothing to say. Nothing to say. Except, there.
No, and I was hoping there'd be some Windows Mobile 7 stuff. Mary Jo Foley caught wind of a Windows Mobile 6.5 release that's probably coming next year. I didn't hear anything about that, but they talked about mobile only very generally in the context of we're gonna hit Windows across all these different platforms, and that's, by the way, this is one of them. But I still feel very strongly that have I mentioned how much I hate Windows Mobile, Leo?
Yeah, I think you might have said that once or twice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the case we haven't covered this, I'd like to spend maybe 20 minutes.
I hate Windows Mobile. Well, you know what? Windows Mobile wasn't so bad. The 700W, the Trio, great phone until all these other better phones came out. And then,
Leo,
and then
the World War II field phone was a fine solution for its time.
But you wouldn't want to hear it today.
I agree with you, but technology marches on and. I don't know.
I just got my first update for the G1, the Google phone.
Yeah.
I don't know what they changed, but.
How are you liking that now? It's in the harsh, cold light of the morning.
Now that I've had it for a few weeks and I'm.
Yeah. Now that it's not unique or different. What's going on there?
I think I'm probably going to still use the iPhone predominantly just because of the variety of applications. But they've really amped up the number of apps on here. I think it's a very. I like the feel of it. Not everybody will. I like a heavy phone. I love the keyboard. I think for things like, I just downloaded, for instance, and this is a very geeky thing, but an SSH terminal program that allows me to log into my servers using a secure shell and do stuff.
How did you ever get married, dude? What is it?
Honey, I know Bash. But you can type it's really useful.
Oh, boy.
I like it a lot. I mean, the iPhone is sexier, prettier, better for a lot of things. But still, it's so close that I'm carrying both of them. It really is the truth.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think if I go Windows Mobile, God help me, it would have to be that style of phone where you can slide the keyboard out and get the full keyboard.
Yeah.
I would consider that.
I don't know if you want to go Windows Mobile, dude.
Oh, no, I pretty much don't. But
yeah. So there's going to be Live Mesh for the Mac. Do they show that off?
They didn't show it off, but it's out now. If you go to livemesh.com, you have to go. In fact, you might want to do this right now because I believe they're going to run out of invites and that's going to be it. I think if you just go to livemesh.com with a Mac.
In Safari or?
Safari works. That's how I did it. And log in to your live account and add that machine. You'll see an option there for the Mac OS install.
Oh, that's cool.
It works.
But that's a limited mesh.live.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a live account. I can use my Hotmail account too, right? I mean, I'm still using that.
Yeah. I mean, ideally you'd be using whatever is your primary live account because you want to synchronize data between the different machines.
Right. It recognizes me. So that's good. Okay. Sign in.
Yeah. See if you get that option.
Okay. And then live desktop.
No, you don't want that. You want the devices one.
Add device?
Yes.
Okay, add device. Limited Mac Tech Preview now available.
There you go.
Welcome to Live Mesh Mac Tech Preview. To install, yes, add device. That's very cool.
Yeah, so I've got my MacBook on there. And it works nice. It works like a Mac app. It's not to get off on an Apple thing here for everybody, but it's got the little mesh icon up in your menu bar. Like, what do you call those little icons? Like sync and, you know, the Mac. You know the Mac.
Those
tiny icons up in the corner like you have for a time machine.
Oh, yeah, the menu icons. Like the system.
Menu icons. It has its own menu icon.
Oh, this is cool.
And it's nice.
Oh. So that means now that this is actually a really good solution for people who use Windows and Mac to share data back and forth.
Yes.
Yes. Ooh, I like it. I just opened it and it's working.
Yep.
Oh, how nice. How nice that they didn't leave us out. I guess, though, if you're going to do a mesh, if you're going to do a cloud solution, it's got to be platform agnostic ultimately, doesn't it?
I would say so, yeah.
So presumably they would ship a Mac Office, for instance, that would support the Azure.
That might be the silliest thing you've ever said, Leo.
You just like it when I say Azure.
Azure. I can assure you.
Assure you that Azure. I'm getting blue just thinking. Are you giving away more books? In fact, now might be a good time to give those away, Paul.
Right now? Yeah, exactly.
Just get rid of them.
I can only give them away.
Thank you, Microsoft,
for completely screwing me.
No.
Yeah, so I will announce this on the site. I got 30 more books while I was away. The first 30 are out now, finally. They're out shipping around the world or around the country anyway.
Excellent.
I will announce the times and dates. I'll do it the same way, but we'll do it from the website this time. So I would just, and I'll put something on the front page when it happens. So I would say just stay tuned to supersite.com, winsupersite.com. And I will do that. I see
I'm creating my live mesh folders.
And look at that mess. Folder. Look at that. What's going on up there?
This is my menu.
Up the top. You got like 17 icons over there.
Oh, yeah, they're all doing something. this is the equivalent of the system tray. By the way, I really liked what they did with the system tray on Windows 7.
I do, too.
It's gone.
It's pretty much gone. By default, you don't get any stuff. Throw something down there, you don't see it. You have to go enable it. You have to go find it and enable it. I kind of like that.
Although, I thought maybe it's just a cosmetic fix because the stuff's still running, right? It's just not, you don't have that.
It is still running, but honestly, for a lot of people, the problem is, it's the notifications, right? It squelches all this stuff by default. It's kind of nice.
UAC is also less annoying?
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about this. UAC over time on Vista actually becomes less annoying on its own, right?
Right.
What was that face?
That's just a little face. I mean,
it's like your expectation face.
Yeah.
So I got to stop looking at this.
Stop looking at the TV. Pay attention.
So, no, by default, it's really interesting. UAC comes up almost never at all. And this is out of the box, you know, so I have installed it on a few machines here since I've been home. And you very rarely see UAC. And when you do see it, you don't get that annoying, everything's got to stop because I have a question to ask kind of effect.
Right.
Just a little dialogue box.
Right.
And so even the few times it runs, you, it's just not that annoying. It's nice.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, they call it turning down the noise.
Turning down the noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good way to, I think that's a very apt way to put it. That's, I think, exactly how users feel. It's like this machine.
This is annoying and it's
noisy. It's like talking to me too much. I don't want to.
Didn't want you to do that. Exactly. I took a screenshot of a Norton dialogue today that said, it says something along the lines of, "We are currently doing something in the background." Hey, that's great. Thank you.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Here's what I want you to do.
What?
I want you to shut up and don't tell me anything unless I'm about to be hacked.
Here's what you're doing.
What
I want you to do. Yeah.
Did you know that a computer program can do stuff in the background?
No.
My goodness. What a capability. You are a really impressive bit of technology.
Yeah.
Could I upgrade for another year now? Or are you too busy?
They didn't even tell you what. They just say, we're doing something in the background.
It didn't even say what. Yeah.
It's like, we're doing something in the background.
It's
I don't know.
Completely normal. Nothing to see here.
Move along.
But yet, and yet we felt the need to tell you about it.
Those aren't the droids you're looking for.
Unbelievable. Anyway.
Now, I see a note here on your rundown. New Hotmail. Have we not talked about the new Hotmail like 8 times now? Is there something new about the new Hotmail?
Yeah, no, it's actually new. So, no, they've been slowly trickling out this new version. Oh. This time it really is. I don't know what the new stuff we talked about before was, but this is
I'm
new.
Going there right now.
Well, you may not have it. That's the problem. So there, I just got it. I made the mistake of thinking that everyone had it, but I as I've been discovering via email today.
How will I know?
Oh, you'll know. Because it will be so...
It's starting to sound like a Dr. Yeah. Ruth show. How will I know? You will know.
I can't tell you what it is, but I do know it when I see it. All right. No, it's you'll get a window there.
Oh, yeah. It says your inbox has a slightly new look.
Does it say slightly new, really?
Yeah.
Does it say slightly?
It does. Your inbox has a slightly new look. No big changes. Yeah. More like a repainted room than a remodeled house.
Let me explain why they're saying that then. Because last time around, a year and a half, 2 years ago, when they did the last big refresh of this, all the, you know, they have hundreds of millions of people using this thing, and some of them are the AOL types, and they didn't want, they completely freaked. Yeah. They freaked so much that Microsoft actually today supports two user interfaces in Hotmail. They support a classic UI and this new UI. So this, or well, whatever they call it, but now this new interface, the one they're releasing now, supposedly combines the best of both. But they're trying to communicate that to people because they don't want them to complain again. So,
well, it is. You know, I have to say, it's very clean.
I think it's light looking.
It's light. I really appreciate that. And I think especially, well, I think everybody, I mean, it's light like Google's light. I mean, it's just pure function.
I was going to say, you can see, you can see the Gmail influences here, right? Lots of white space, light blue colors, not much else.
Not crazy about the ad banners, but.
You can pay and get rid of those.
Oh, you can?
Yep. $19.95 a year.
Oh, that's not bad. That's just like Yahoo Mail. Okay.
Yeah.
I think, and oh, and look, they've got, oh, look at this. They've got some nice little templates. This is nice.
Yeah. Themes.
And, yeah. Themes, yeah. This is pretty. There, I did a little chocolate thing.
Notice on the themes, you can actually mouse over them and they'll give you a preview of how that will change the whole page.
You know, I have to say that Ajax has changed the world. I'm telling you. It's the fact that you don't have to refresh the page to make these kinds of changes. It literally makes a web page more like an app, more functional. And none of this would be happening, if that capability hadn't existed. I think it's great. I like it. I might use Hotmail. The main reason I don't use Hotmail is because the name sounds like it's a porn service. It's the only reason. Now, Live I can get with. Live is live.com is better than me.com. I don't like me either.
I hear you.
That's the Apple's me. It's all about me. Mail me.
Yes.
Typical, isn't it? Let's take a break for Audible, and then we're going to get your pick for software and a tip of the week as well. But our good friends at Audible.com are always plying us with goodies. Great new books that you can download and listen to. I'm in the middle of, I've mentioned this a couple of times now, but I'm really loving it. And I can't stop talking about it. Legacy of Ashes. Did we talk about this? This is the very long CIA history. This is...
No.
Man, I mean, you know, you and I both love...
This is better than my book. Why don't we just run with this one?
No, if you don't like your book, but I'm just saying you and
No, I might as well hold off on it. That's fine. Right. This is a good one.
You and I both love spy stories and fiction around this. This guy interviewed everybody. It's all first person. He looked at actual documents, I guess Freedom of Information Act. I'm not sure. A lot of this stuff is now declassified. Okay. Starting in 1946, when the wartime OSS turned into the CIA, going right up to practically the present, it is just a history, a litany of failures and screw-ups. And just, this is Legacy of Ashes. This is where the title comes from. It's kind of stunning. And he, you know, he says part of the problem is that Americans are just not comfortable with spying and covert action. We're an open people. Sure. We've never really felt comfortable that this is necessary, and yet we know it is. So this ambivalence has really demoralized and debilitated our secret service.
We also like to believe we can look at license plates from space and we know exactly what everyone on Earth is doing.
Yeah. So that's I haven't gotten to that part, but I can imagine that starting in the 80s, technology And of course, it didn't help us in 9/11.
That's the thing. I mean, unfortunately, we probably do have the capability to read a license plate from space. But by the time we figure out who it was,
we don't know what it means.
It's 2 weeks later. It doesn't matter.
Fascinating book. A book I hope the next president of the United States has read, because there is very clearly a mandate to fix this problem. But it's also fun as a history buff to go back and read what really happened, you know. What the Marshall Plan was really all about. You know, that's where the initial funding for the CIA came from. They siphoned it out of the Marshall Plan so that nobody would know that these hundreds of millions of dollars were going to secret intelligence.
So it was a pork project.
Yeah, it was Emux.
Yeah. Okay.
We're going to rebuild Europe and start the CIA. Start the CIA.
We're switching everything over to Corin.
Oh, and just some characters like Wild Bill Donovan. I mean, just some amazing characters in this. It is a fascinating, fascinating book, and it resonates. You know, I've read every Jean Le Carré book and all of these. This is I'm really enjoying it. Now, I don't think it's one credit because it's really long. Sometimes when books are extra long at Audible, they're two credits. I can get you one credit though. Get you started anyway. If you go to audible.com/windows, you can get a credit towards any of their books. And there are a ton of them, 51,000. I suppose on Halloween we should be talking about scary books like Chuck Palahniuk's Haunted. And, some of the great Wes Craven stuff they have on here and so forth. But I don't know. I think Legacy of Ashes is pretty terrifying.
I was going to say, I would think nothing of bringing up a horror book in February. So it's,
yeah, you love those Stephen King stories. So anyway, I'll give it a recommendation. It's 21 hours. It's a long book. If you like history, if you like hearing, I like knowing what really happened. You know, I always, when stuff's going on in politics or whatever, I always think, boy, I can't wait. I hope I live 20 years to the time when this stuff is declassified so I could find out what was really going on. Well, this stuff has been declassified, and now you could find out what's really going on. Winner of the Pulitzer Prize, Legacy of Ashes, The History of the CIA by Tim Weiner. What a great book. My Audible recommendation. For those of you who, like me and Paul, love the spy stories, this is a real-life story of the CIA.
Does it literally say it's not a single credit?
I don't know. That's a good question. Let's see, if I buy it for a friend, I could probably see how many credits it is. It might just be one credit. You know what is more than one credit is, and the reason I say this is Anathema. And I'd recommended this a couple of times.
Oh.
And that is two credits. You know what? I think it's only one credit, Legacy of Ashes. Go to audible.com/windows. And yes, this could be your book. Really well done. The reading is by Stefan Rudnicki, who sounds uncannily like Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock. It always freaks me out a little bit. He's a good reader, really is easy to understand. And on a book like this, you do want somebody who's very clear, precise, so that you can understand what he's saying. Legacy of Ashes, audible.com/windows. We thank him so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Couldn't do it without him. All right. By the way, a reminder for you hear us from time to time referring to the video. We do send video of this show out when we record it. We do it every Thursday at, what time do we do it? 11 a.m. my time, which is 2 p.m. your time. Is that right? Or we do it later? I can't remember. Yeah. 2 p.m. Eastern.
We do it. So, yeah.
Four?
No, we do it. It's four today.
We're doing it late today, but normally we do it at 2 o'clock.
I don't know. I get a calendar. Yeah, it's at 2 o'clock. It is my phone.
That's what the calendar's for. You go to Twit. It's live.twit.tv. You can watch the video at 2 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. You can also listen. We now have an audio stream. So if you're in the car, this actually works in the car. If you have a phone that supports IceCast audio.
Now, how come we don't have a video version of the podcast?
We do. If your phone supported Flash, you could watch our Flash.
No,
a downloadable. Like
a download, yeah.
Yeah, that's the next. That's the plan. It's frankly, it's budgetary concerns. I don't want to. In order to do that, one of the reasons I started this network
to put you on the spot.
No, you're not putting me on the spot. I'm glad to explain it. One of the reasons we started as an audio network is because audio is cheap and easy to do, and I think most of the audience likes listening because you can listen anywhere in your car and so forth.
Sure.
But we now, since we now do video, and we have been for the last 3 months, it does make sense that we would just capture this video that we're doing right now, for instance, and make a show out of it. You know, it turns out, this is one of the reasons Revision 3 laid off 10 people this week. It's very expensive to do video. In order to do a video show, I have to, we're already recording it and taping it. That's a lot of the expense. The next step is I have to hire a full-time editor to take it. We're not going to even edit it that much. We would just put a beginning and an end on it.
Sure.
But then you have to encode it, which takes hours. We would encode it in two different formats. I already figured all this stuff out. I just haven't implemented it in a large size for, say, an Apple TV or a TiVo.
Let's be fair. Aside from the occasional goofy thing, I mean,
most people don't want to see us.
It's just, yeah. I mean,
no,
it's,
I think there's a demand for it. My question is, how much of a demand? We know the advertisers want it, but the problem is the way we get paid for advertising is by the number of people watching. We get paid per 1,000 viewers. So if 1,000 people watch it, if I make $70 for the show and I'm paying $200 to edit it, it ain't going to work for me. So I just don't want to get in the situation, especially with these tough times. We were interviewing people. We were on the verge of hiring Paul. And then the stock market collapsed. I got a little scared. I panicked. Joe the plumber called. He said, don't, whatever you do, don't. And so I decided.
He said, hang these towels in your room and that will handle the humidity.
That's what I did. Yeah. Joe the plumber told me about those. So I decided I'm going to wait. I'm going to see what happens. So far, advertising, knock on wood, has gone up, not down. We've gotten more buys since the crash than, and we haven't lost anybody. But I'm going to wait until January or I think by March we'll know what's going to happen. If advertising continues, I will hire an editor. I know I've said that I would have video by now. We will have video, not every show. If we'll see what people want. If they want this show, Paul, and they want to see your ugly mug.
I feel like I opened a can of worms. I was just...
No, it's a good question. And actually, I'm glad to answer it.
It's like when you ask somebody, how are you doing today? Like, oh, God, my back is killing me.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bore you. I just thought that people might be interested, and that's the rationale. We are doing streaming video, which is cheap.
I have a plan.
Hey, I'm paying attention. I notice when the stock market, and you know, I'm paying attention to this stuff, and I don't want to be here's really the reason. I don't want to hire somebody then fire them 3 months later.
Sure.
So if all goes well, it's my absolute plan to do video of this stuff. I know people want it. We will start by doing a best of, which you will be in. Every show will be in. We'll do a weekly best of, and then we'll move on from there.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. That'll give us some idea of you know, testing the waters. I do look at Revision 3. All my friends worked there or worked there.
Right.
And some of their shows do very well in video. Do better in video than audio, and some do not. And so it's kind of an unknown. We just don't know yet. But I'm always open to people telling me what they want and what they're interested in. And of course, one of the things we are working on, the video we would download. Okay, one more thing. I'm sorry, Paul. I didn't mean to hijack the show.
No.
Nobody ever asks me what I think.
So. Exactly.
Nobody ever talks to me. One of the things we are working on now, what you were talking about would be high quality downloads. Like they really look good. They look better than broadcast. It's what I'm seeing right now. It's the quality
that
we're capturing.
I would want to be part of something that looked better.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's high quality MPEG-2. It's like DVD quality, but, what we are working on with Stickam, which is to be able to record these shows and watch them back as Flash. You know, we rerun this all night. You'll be able to see this show 4 or 5 times in the next 24 hours.
And listen, there's nothing I want to watch or listen to more than myself.
We have viewers who are also capturing it. There's a website, odtv.me, odtv.me, where they record the Flash video. And you can go watch it. So if you want to see what the video looks like, go to odtv.me.
If you want to understand why we're not doing it.
Yeah, that'll tell you. But then that's not as high quality as it'll be. That's just the Flash that we're sending out right now. Anyway, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll edit all this out.
I just think it's funny.
You asked.
Hurt anyway.
Never going to ask. No, we want to do, you know, you do a great job. You send the video, you got a great camera, you got a great shot. I mean, this is one show that I really would like to do in video for sure. Now, do you have, my friend, a tip of the week?
I do.
Oh, and what would that be, sir?
Well, let me tell you, Leo.
You have no idea.
I forgot what it was. It's no, it's, you know, I came home with Windows 7. So one of the issues here is I want to install this on everything, but I also want to make sure I can get back to my other stuff. So I think we've discussed this feature before, but it bears repeating. If so, that one of the hidden features in disk management, as it's called in Windows Vista, is that you can shrink and expand partitions on the fly without harming the data.
Whoa. I didn't know that.
And actually, in Windows 7, it gets even better, but we can get to that in a moment. So in Windows Vista, you can go there are a couple of ways. Actually, let me see. I think you can go to it more quickly than I'm doing it. Does it work?
Yeah, I'll show. I could pull it up.
Yeah, so you know how to do it. You right-click on computer and do manage.
Manage. I use this all the time to format drives when I put a new drive in.
You know, the other way to do this, by the way, is you can type in the word computer to start menu search and then click on computer management.
All right.
But either way.
So I go to start menu search and I type computer and then computer management shows up right there. Oh, yeah, in the start menu. So once I'm in the management console, which I think is one of the most useful, fantastically useful things that's been in since XP.
And it's just hard to find. You know, it's silly. No one knows it's there.
But here's disk management.
Yep. So you click on that. Sometimes it takes a while.
So it goes out and it looks in and sees all the different hard drives. And you actually, this looks a little bit like partition magic. I mean, you really can see the partitioning. Yeah. So you're saying I can resize these partitions?
Yeah. So I can't, if you were to take that first, that one there, right click on that, and you'll probably see options for shrinking.
Shrink volume.
Because it can't extend because there's no room. Now, that's what I just did. So I shrunk my C drive down and I made room for.
Look at that.
For Windows 7.
That is really cool. So that is like partition magic. It's non-destructive. It doesn't delete anything.
Right. And by the way, it's on the fly, too. It doesn't reboot. It doesn't do a bunch of crazy stuff. Now, there are limitations. It's not just like partition magic. If you had three partitions on the same drive and you deleted the one in the middle, right, physically, right. I guess, and wanted to expand the one on the end, it wouldn't work.
Okay.
You can't move them around, right? It doesn't do that. So it's not a complete replacement, but it is kind of neat. You know, I had one partition, wanted to make it two. You know, you just right-click, shrink volume, shrink it by a certain amount of space, right-click in the empty space, new volume, and you're up and running.
I'm not going to do it because this is the same machine we're recording this
show. Yeah, I was going to say, we've been down that one
you
before.
You know me and buttons.
Don't click on, what does it say? Shrink. It.
Should I shrink that?
Yeah, sure, kid. What the heck? What could go wrong? What could go wrong? It's not live or anything. It's fine.
Yeah, that's cool. That's, you know, isn't that funny? I've been using the disk management console for the longest time. I had no idea it had non-destructive resize.
Yeah. So now Windows 7 in the same utility, there's an option. If you go into more actions on the right, one of the options is, I think it says mount virtual hard drive. And if you have a VHD on your hard drive, as you would for virtual PC, you can actually mount it as a drive letter.
Wow.
And potentially, I haven't done this yet, but I guess you can also boot from it like we were discussing earlier. But the thing that's interesting, I was talking about to Ed Bott.
I don't understand
about
how you can boot from it because.
Yeah.
How do it know?
I don't know. I haven't done it. By next week, I
it's
intend to.
It's not a partition. I don't,
Well, so here's the joke. So let's say you have a 160 gig hard drive, and that's on your system. That's all you have, right? Yep. And you create a 60 gig virtual hard drive on there, and those things expand dynamically. As you probably
know. It could be 10 gigs.
It could be 2 gigs. Yeah, it could be anything. Who knows? So I was joking with him. I said, I'm going to create a 160 gig virtual hard drive. I'm going to mount it as a drive, and I'm going to double my disk storage. And if you understand what I'm saying, that should be funny.
It's a geek so. Joke.
It's kind of an insider
joke. It's good. It's a geek joke.
Like Ed laughed.
That's really cool. So that's a very good tip. That I guess you still might want partition magic for some more sophisticated stuff, but boy, is that a handy thing.
Now, I haven't used partition magic in a while. Do we know that it works with Windows Vista?
Because I have no idea. I would presume they've updated it. But.
Yeah, that was an issue for a while. I do know that. But, you know, for some things, it's in there free. I mean, you might as well take a look and see if it can do what you want it to do. If, for example, if all you want to do is add a partition there at the end of the drive, this will do it, you know, and it's free. And it doesn't, unlike partition magic, you know how that works. You know, you reboot, it does all its text mode stuff, and it kind of comes back up after that. This doesn't do any of that stuff, so it happens on the fly. It's nice.
Very cool. Very cool. That is a really useful tool. All right. Yeah. Can't wait. See, another reason to love Windows 7.
It just keeps getting better. It's all.
Are you gonna start a new book? Raphael and you are going to work on something.
Yeah. I think we might be able to start on it pretty soon. That's what he was asking me. So he says, "Well, what do we just do? We start now? You know,
maybe
we should. You know, that fit me.
You had said last week that they had so componentized this that everything that was in there was like done, and they would slowly add things until the August ship date. Now that you've seen it, is that your understanding still?
Yeah.
So so there's no reason not to write a book.
They completely verified that.
You write a book on what they've got, and you add chapters as they add features. It's easy.
And there are little things. You know, there's a feature in there called Windows Solution Center that's in the beta, and it's a superset of what we now call Windows Security Center. But they're actually changing the name of it. So the next version we get, it will be called Action Center, which may or may not be a better name. It doesn't really matter. But that's, you know, the kind of thing that can change, right? It's not a big deal. But the feature itself is in there, right? It's happening. So... not a big deal. There'll be things like that. That's not a big deal. I mean, you remember with Windows Vista, I got screwed royally by writing about the file system stuff back in December of 2003. It changed 11 times. You know, it might be humorous for people to go back and look at this chapter and how I had to change it over time. Mostly it's painful, you know, for me, but I don't want to go through that again. But I think that might actually be possible if I was so inclined, I could actually start working on this right now.
Very cool. I think you just finished the other one. You need a little bit more of a break. But
I was thinking the same thing. That's why I was phrasing it in theoretical terms.
Let Raphael start. He can write the introduction.
Yeah, here's some chapters. Why don't you update these?
I'm the wrong guy to ask. The last thing I wrote, and I think it's the only thing I wrote this year, was a 200 word foreword for a book. Nice. And the editor only had to ping me like 80 times saying,
Right. That's the other thing. So I do things on the web every day, no problem. But when there's an editor involved, they always, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? You know, for some reason I can write 31,000 words a week, no problem. But when it comes to a book, it's like pulling teeth. I don't know.
It's funny. I guess the idea that if you write every day, like a blog thing, that loosens it up the juices. But a book is, you know, that's
it loosens up all kinds of things.
Yeah, but it does. You really don't want to loosen some of those things either.
Yeah, it's ugly.
Yeah. All right, software pick of the week. I like this one.
Yeah, have you heard of this?
Yeah.
A Microsoft product.
Yeah. Oh, tell me.
Now,
I think I've heard.
Yeah,
that.
So, well, it's being tested now. I was curious to see if something like this was in Windows 7, and I haven't seen it in there yet, but there's a Microsoft tool called Microsoft PC Advisor, and basically it's something that doesn't replace AV or anti-spyware. Instead, it kind of works side by side, and it basically the first time you run it looks at your system and runs a scan, and then it comes up with all this advice about fixing things. And some of the things that it comes up with, right, they're actually pretty good, you know. Of course, I don't have any shots to remember what it came up with, but it will look at things. It looks at things that you wouldn't expect. It's not just about maintenance or security, although it does that stuff. It's also about performance, you know, and things like that. Like, it will look at your registry and say, "Hey, you've got all this stuff in here for items that you have uninstalled that wasn't cleaned up. Would you like us to remove them?" And you say, "Yeah, I would like you to remove those things." Or, you know, Office 2007 isn't configured to run optimally. Would you like us to fix that? Yeah, I would like that, you know.
So I guess the question is, how accurate is it? How useful is it?
Yeah, so I've run it on a few machines. I mean, I can't say that I've noticed a 10% performance improvement or anything like that. And I can say that some of the stuff that it has done, you know, is a little odd. You know, for example, I was taking notes at the reviewer's workshop on Sunday. And, of course, I muted my speakers just in case something would happen. So I get this little pop-up that says, "Hey, something's wrong with your audio system. Would you like us to fix it?" No, you know, and you kind of get rid of it, and then it pops up again. "Hey, you know, you don't have any sound. I mean, we can turn the sound on. Do you want us to turn the sound on?" And it, so it does things like that, and you could tell it, "Hey, seriously, stop asking me about this." But I think that it's, first of all, it's free. It's unclear when and where this ships in final form and so forth. I have a download URL that I provide off of my blog, and we have a URL I can give you to get to that. But you know, maybe it disappears, maybe it appears in final form at some point. It's really kind of unclear, but it's really a response to the notion that, you know, Windows PCs tend to degrade in performance over time. You know, what can we do to prevent that from happening? And what can we do to, you know, monitor the system on an ongoing basis to keep it up and running the way it should be, you know? And there's other stuff in there. They have tips and little interactive tutorials. There are actually videos that guide you through, you know, how to get things done. And actually things that appear on screen where they highlight your start button, say, click here, and you do, and you follow them through the steps necessary to get going. My son just walked by my office wearing the...
What's his costume?
Scream. This, you know, the Scream costume. He's never seen the movie, thank God. But he I think he thinks it's from a painting.
Oh, it's that horrible, so, that horrible face.
Yeah, the Scream mask. He's 10, so these things are... Anyway.
My son is, you know, it's so funny. He's 14.
Yes.
And I'm saying, you got to get a costume. You got to get a costume. He doesn't. No, I don't want a costume. No, he said, get this. He said, I'll figure it out on Halloween. I said, no. You know, that means you're going to take a paper bag, cut holes for the eyes, and that's your costume. He says, I could do anything. I could take a branch, paste it to my forehead. I'll be a tree. I said, Henry, you're not going to want to walk around with a branch taped to your forehead. Let's do a costume. What's the problem? And I think he's embarrassed to have me go with him to the Halloween store because he's 14, right? And he says, and so we drove by. And he literally ducked in the car. He said, all my friends are in there. I said, Henry, just come on. I'll stand 10 feet behind you. Just pick something. So finally, I coerced him in. I got him in. It was like so fast. All I could find, all he wanted was, I tried all this stuff. He says, stop it, Dad, you're embarrassing me. I got him facial fur. It glues to your face.
Like that magnet toy where you make
No, but it's more, you know, and then you're supposed to comb your hair into it. So you look like Teen Wolf, right? I said, this is the perfect costume. Just wear your letter jacket, you know, your teen stuff, but you'll have facial hair like a werewolf, and it's easy, and you can wear it all day. So we'll see if he does it. But
fair enough.
You know, what I'm saying is, enjoy this time.
Oh, God, it's over before you can snap your fingers.
Yeah, in 2 years, the kid's going to say, I don't want to do a costume.
I think 14 might have been the last year I went out for Halloween as a kid. I dressed up as a girl.
Yeah.
And I think I was propositioned by half the guys in the neighborhood. And that was kind of the end of that. You know, that was, you know,
that's really bad.
Halloween got ruined for Paul. You know,
you would make a lovely woman, though.
I was cute.
Kind of a manly woman. But
sure. Nothing like back hair, you know. So anyway, this PC Advisor thing.
Oh, okay. We got distracted again. I'm not a big fan of, let's say, for instance, registered cleaners,
right?
Because in my experience, the risk is greater than the reward.
Fair enough.
How do you stand on that stuff?
I agree with you. I would never run such a thing.
Yeah. You might help. Rarely does, but it's much more likely to screw you up royally.
It's unclear to me ultimately what effect a bloated register really has on your system.
Yeah, as long as it's under 2 gigabytes, who cares?
Right. I mean, if it's parsing the thing when you boot up, that's one thing. But once it's gone by that stuff, you know, day to day as you're running the system, I mean, I don't know. You know, of course, my PCs are a little bit different than most people's. I tend to wipe these things out regularly because of all the testing I do. So, you know, maybe for most people where you have the same install of Windows up and running for 1 or 2 years, horrifying even thinking of that. But I suppose it's possible. You know, you might need that kind of thing. But I would look at something like this. I mean, A, it's from Microsoft. It's from Microsoft. And the tools are cool. It seems to span the range of things you have on there. One of the things it did was it said, hey, this version of Adobe Flash you have is out of date. You should get the new version. Click here to get it.
Yeah.
You know, that's neat.
Yeah, that would be useful.
Yeah.
Are programs. There are third-party programs that do this. It's nice that this comes from Microsoft. It's free.
Right.
And, you know, as long as it's not doing something horrible, anything
else. Who knows?
Helps.
Once all you people start downloading it, maybe it will disappear. It's hard to say.
All right, I'm getting it
right now.
It's
hard to say.
We've got a link.
I have a tiny URL link. So it's tinyurl.com/PCAdvisor2. I had to take the two because
Somebody had PC Advisor 1. Yeah. tinyurl.com/PCAdvisor, the number 2. We'll put a link in the show notes also. Hey, it doesn't hurt to have it. And, you know, let me ask you this. Have you seen all these ads on TV for this program that speeds up your PC? They're buying a lot of ad time. In fact, it was on the ALCS by accident. It's what is it called?
It's not a sham wow, is it?
No, but it might as well be.
I have seen that ad.
It's finallyfast.com. The funny thing about the ad is
it doesn't do anything.
Well, it's the first machine they show is clearly a MacBook that they've superimposed a blue screen of death on. Nice. And then the guy calls Finally Fast or whatever, downloads the software, runs it, and then everything's running fine. He's using an iMac. So they're, I think the ad agency might have been a little confused. But my question is if this is a good program or not. It's my understanding that the company that creates this was known as a malware company not so long ago.
They are a Microsoft certified partner. I would say, you know, one of the things that I'm a little suspicious of is it has pictures of the Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, and Forbes logos, and it says we have been featured in these publications, but you can't click on them and read the thing they wrote. In other words,
featured
for spreading spyware. Featured for what?
Yeah, so it's Ascentive.
This looks deceptive. You click here to get a free scan. It's going to tell you have a problem, and then it's going to want to sell you the product. And you just had the free scan. You must have a problem,
right?
You know, isn't this one of those?
I should run it on my Mac. That's always fun.
Oh, this doesn't. Yeah, we don't recommend this.
No. Okay. No. Good.
Fine. I got to look this up. I have not heard of this. This sounds dubious.
They have been buying ads everywhere. I see them all over the place. And most notably, do you remember, the Red Sox game on TBS that they couldn't get the first two innings up?
This is one of the things they showed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So they're showing some lousy sitcom.
We should have bought some time on it. I mean.
Well, this company didn't buy the ALCS. They didn't buy the playoffs. They bought this crappy sitcom that TBS had to run.
Yeah. They had time to kill. And
so they're running the sitcom. The ad pops up. I saw, that's interesting. I went to the website down because they had no idea they were going to be running in the playoffs and that 10,000 people would hit the website all at once. I didn't think that boded too well, but.
Wow.
You know, I don't know what the story is.
Well, Microsoft is running a campaign right now against things like this where they, you know, in fact, some companies have been sued. I know in Washington State, I want to see New York State because this is deceptive advertising. What Microsoft said was that you run an online scan, it always says you have a problem, right, even when you don't, and then that fools people into thinking they need this product.
Right.
I'm not saying this is exactly what they're doing, but it is exactly what Microsoft said companies were doing.
You know what I should do? Let's run the scan on my Mac. see if anything comes. Oh, I have to download something. I'm sorry, I can't recommend that you go on a website, download something and run it. I don't know if this company, Ascentive, is good or bad, but
I should install this on a fresh virtual machine, right, that has nothing on it.
Yeah.
And see what it says. And if it recommends this product, then they have no.
The thing I've been told is they made a program that has been identified as malware. It was called Spyware Striker. It's the same company, Ascentive, I believe.
Right.
So, whether that's a false positive, I don't know. But I'm seeing these hits, and it just makes me nervous. I guess I'd like to know more about this company before I'd run out and get something like that.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for that help, that encouragement.
That'll be $50.
Yeah, and we'll look into it. We'll see if we can find out more about Ascentive and about Finally Fast. But in general, I'm not a fan of this stuff. Use the PC Advisor. Yeah. It's free. You know, I hate to say it, but the best thing in general, reinstall Windows once in a while. Start from scratch. Right?
Sure. It's painful, but you'll feel better for it.
as with most painful things.
Yeah. If it doesn't kill you, it will make.
He's the Nietzsche of Windows experts, Paul Thurrott. You can catch his act at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Don't forget, of course, Windows IT Pro. He's a news editor there in his book, soon to be a collector's item.
Jeez.
Windows Vista Secrets, second edition, just came out. Actually, it's a great book. If you're using Vista, you really should have. I have it. It's right on my shelf. from Wiley & Sons. And I bought it. I paid good money for it at Barnes & Noble. And if you like the show, you can hear it. As I mentioned, you can watch it live Thursday afternoons on live.twit.tv or listen at twit.am. But you can also download it. It's on iTunes. Just search for Twit at the iTunes store. All of our podcasts.
It's on Zoom, too.
I should say it's on Zoom, too.
Just throwing it out there.
If you go to, so I haven't tried this. I should, on the Zoom software, if you search for Twit.
I have, you will, and I have actually have a link to the Zoom download. So it will even launch the Zoom player.
Go to Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com.
Somewhere in there. Yeah, it's on the, it's probably on the podcast page. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you link every show, you link on the front page, which I greatly appreciate. Sure. Paul, go get some rest. Are you going trick-or-treating? Is that what's next for you?
No, I'm going to be home dishing out the candy, hopefully not in a coma on my front stairs. But
me too. My kid told me, he said, I said, you need to be home by dark. He said, dark, I'm 14. Dad, I'm staying out all night. I said, I said, no, you're not.
Well, something to look forward to.
So somewhere between dusk and dawn, he's going to show up.
There you go. Well, it is Halloween. So
Jennifer's she's in Mexico at a resort. She cleverly picked Halloween to be out of the country. So it's all up to me. Thanks, Paul. We'll talk again next week. And don't forget a special edition of Twit this Sunday. We're going to put out Twit 167. Will be a PDC edition with Raphael. Paul, we're trying to get Mary Jo. We'll get Ed Bott. We'll get Jerry Parnell. And we'll have a very interesting
What time is the recording on that
3 p.m. We do that live at live.twit.tv, 3 p.m. Pacific. That's 6 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, if you can make it. And of course, again, that's at on iTunes as well. And, you know, you might want to stick around. John Hodgman will join us right after the PDC roundtable. You can berate him. He's PC from the Mac Switch ads.
I like him a lot.
He's one of my favorite funny men. He's got a new book out. Yeah. And I just love him. I thought it'd be really fun to have PC on after our PDC wrap up to talk. You know, I don't even know. He might use, we don't know if he's a Windows or a Mac guy. I don't know what he uses. We'll find out.
We're going to find out.
He's a Twitterer. Paul Thurrott.
He's a biter.
Have a great one. I'll talk to you next week, Paul. Actually, I'll talk to you Sunday.
Oh, right. I'm putting it on my calendar now.
Please do. And thanks for joining us, everybody, on Windows Weekly. We'll see you next time.